Blog Talk Radio.
This warning is differed by the writing of words, the translation of thoughts deciphered. In front of justice, leagues and lanes explain. Must mislead to rain, smell the mind, tell the time, dwell and shine, rays may blind. They try them, covering and hovering over still. When at the same time soberless, somehow then turns to now. While the potent shall open potential devotion. First I am devoted to the ocean. Birth, month one after June, day seven come forth master moon. Spirit like lotion on the earth's skin. Crust smells like lust, so I discuss must and pass the boom. Pass the boom.
See,
pass the boom.
See,
your problem is consuming instead of blooming. The free flower flows within, growing, while the one holding is unknowing, grooming, silent soul, playing the violent role it seems.
All right, good morning, and welcome to Spiritual Boot Camp with Dr. Dave and Uncle Lou in the house.
Uncle Lou,
how are you
is
doing
here.
This morning?
Uncle Lou is doing great, except it's not morning where I am.
Well, you know, the world is big, and it's always the same time everywhere if you think about it.
It's always now.
It's always now. Well, anyhow, so today's show, Uncle Lou. Well, before we get into today's show, anything interesting going on in your life,
spiritually speaking?
Spiritually. Is there progression?
The most fascinating thing that's happened to me lately is you're giving me the assignment to research the Mandela Effect. I had no idea what it was about, and I was fascinated to learn about it, you know.
Excellent.
And we're going to sink our teeth into that big time here today.
Oh, yeah. Well, it all started, as it often does, when I walked into the coffee shop the other morning, and one of the baristas asked me if I was familiar with the Mandela Effect, and I said I'd read about it, because I had, but it had been like, you know, a year or two, and I didn't really remember, and so I was happy to dive in. And I've got to say, out of the gates, there's a of all the how do we turn this like paranormal or conspiracy theory? How are we going to define these, Uncle Lou?
Boy, yeah, that's a really good question, because it's my research has led me to the unresolved conclusion that this is either done by the, you know, the banksters, the millionaires, the Illuminati, the 1%, or we do this collectively with our unconscious. So there was no real firm resolution as to who's behind this, you know, number
right.
one. So that changes the category you want to throw it into, you know?
Well, okay. So I will let you know. I didn't put it in the, little blurb because I thought it was just too much information, but, there is a writer, and she is credited with, you know, coming up with the term Mandela Effect, and it's all based on the fact that she, along with a lot of other people, had this memory that Nelson Mandela had died in prison in the 1980s, right? And it turned out a lot of people had that memory. And it came up in 2013 when he was released from that South African prison he'd been in for 27 years. Her name was Fiona Broom. She was a paranormal investigator, Fiona Broom. And she was the one that coined the term the Mandela Effect. Okay, so just so our listeners out there that aren't familiar with this, there is the one side that says her theory. I won't say argument. We don't need to argue. I love it when opposites are true, right? But you got to be on a higher spiritual plane to see the truth of them, right, Uncle Lou?
Right.
So anyhow, she says her theory is that there's several parallel universes and they're lined up right next to each other, right? And so. And she also is the collective mass consciousness co-creative ability, the stuff that we've talked about. Corey Good and David Wilcock are really pushing that we need to get control of our co-creative ability to actually create the universe around us, and that people have ignored that for thousands of years, partially because they've been led down the wrong path and fooled, and partially because they've been mind controlled with mass media, especially TV and now computers, to forget that we create the reality around us. The very reality is not a solid, static thing. It is something that, wait, is static the right word there? I don't think so. It's not a, what's the word I'm looking for, Uncle Lou? It's not a set thing. It's something that's pliable. And so what happens is, in our memories, because these are just little, mostly the thing about Mandela effect is they're little factoids that aren't really that important. Of course, it's important whether Nelson Mandela was freed or died, but in our memory, the actual memory isn't that important. The memory of Berenstain Bears, that is the, Uncle Lou, have you looked into this Berenstain Bear matter at all? Because that seems to be the, actually at the moment, the most compelling, or not compelling, but the one that most people are involved in, Berenstain Bears. That some people remember it as Berenstein, S-T-E-I-N, and it is currently, if you grab a book, you see that it's Berenstain, S-D-A-I-N. Any, you have any thoughts on that one? Uncle Lou, you there? You with me? No, I thought I was talking a lot. Just, we lost you, Uncle Lou. Is your mic on? All right. Well, anyhow, so this Mandela effect is, it is on the one side, the misremembering of little facts. Enough people in the conscious, in the public, they just misremember it. They misremember that Nelson Mandela died, and therefore they created the memory that Nelson Mandela lived, right? And that's the same thing. Berenstain Bears spelled one way, but everybody remembers it, S-T-E-I-N. Now, the other side of the coin are the psychologists, and they say, look, this is simply a matter of confabulation. And confabulation, if you look it up, is a term that means in our minds, when we look back on our memories, there's no way that in any moment, anywhere, that anybody can remember everything. I mean, even as you just look out the window at in my situation, a street with cars on it, there's no way I could remember every bird, every bee, every leaf on every tree, every car going by, what's going on inside of every car. It's just too much information. And so what happens is when we think back on a memory and we construct it, that we fill in those gaps with just logical things that we expect to be true. And in some cases, some of those fill-ins are bigger than others, right? But it's the little ones, like whether it's Berenstain Bears or Berenstein Bears, whether Charles Schultz is spelled with a T or without a T. These are just, they're little things. Our brain fills them in. But then what happens is because of ego, the way that when we remember an experience, the human mind works that when we remember an experience, then what happens is we think that is it. Like if all of the evidence pointing to the contrary says that the way we remember it isn't true, then we don't go with what the facts say. We go with what we believe to be true. And therefore, when we see these little changes like Berenstain, when we were a kid, remember, Bernstein is the most, I thought it was the Berenstain Bears. Berenstain is the most like common name, so therefore we change it. We just flip that little fact, and then later in life when we're remembering it and we see that, oh, we had it wrong, rather than go, oh, we had it wrong, we construct theories of parallel universes and mass collective consciousness, and we do all these things just to avoid the fact that, okay, that little fact, we don't remember it correctly. And that's what the psychologists say is happening with the Mandela effect. So, hey, maybe Uncle Lou's back. Uncle Lou, are you back?
Yeah, I am back, and I don't know what the hell happened. I thought you were the one who died out here. No, I am sorry for my absence.
That's okay.
Sure
let's just move on. So I just did a detailed explanation of what the Mandela effect is. I think I explained it pretty well, and I gave both sides of the story. I don't know if you heard that. I gave the parallel universe, misremembering, Mandela effect theory, and then I gave the psychologist, you know, explanation that it's simply confabulation and it's people filling in the facts and their little
factoids.
Well,
related to the parallel universe theory is the accumulation of small amounts of antimatter by CERN, and they say it's the presence of the CERN that attracts these other dimensions and allows them to slightly overlap or intersect or whatever. That's an active theory as well.
Okay, that's a very fair theory, but to explain what the heck you're talking about, let's tell the listeners what CERN is. I'm sure many of them know, but, you know, if my mom's listening, she doesn't know what we're talking about. Do you want to go ahead, or shall I have to listen?
Well, CERN is a large particle collider, Hadron Collider. It straddles France and Switzerland. It's in two countries. It is enormous. I think it's 19 kilometers in circumference. It's an enormous particle accelerator, one of the largest on the planet. And they are bombarding electrons into each other and studying the resultant particles of these collisions. And one of them is antimatter, which they're able to contain. If it's not contained, it'll lead to an explosion. It is extremely difficult to accumulate. They may have an entire teaspoon of this stuff in Switzerland after all the experimentations they've done. Actually, in the very second of the Da Vinci Code movies called Angels and Demons, it starts out, they're in the CERN lab and they've isolated antimatter, and the church is trying to squash it because it thinks it's going to disprove that God created everything, and they're blaming or attributing the so-called Big Bang to the presence of an antimatter explosion. Anyway, it picks up right there at CERN with stolen antimatter, and you'd have to see the movie to get the rest of it. So this is not some oddball new theory. It's been around for a while, because the truth is Dan Brown wrote Angels and Demons before he wrote the Da Vinci Code.
So
it's been around a while.
In Switzerland, what they've got is this super lab where they're trying out things that we've never tried before that involve the kind of stuff that leads to nuclear bombs and parallel universes possibly, and traveling faster than the speed of light. All the crazy science that, and a lot of people think they're playing God out there. They think there's something they call a God particle at CERN. And they truly feel like they're messing up dimensions and realities, all this stuff, or have the potential to. So anyhow, with all that in mind, let's get back to this Mandela effect. Uncle Lou, I have refrained from telling you my opinion to date of the Mandela effect, but I'm now going to do so. I got to say that confabulation to me makes a lot more sense than parallel. I mean, I believe there are parallel universes. I believe that there's densities, at least, or that might be one way to define it, and that they're very closely linked to each other, because, you know, like when you die from mortal life, the Maranche life, or whatever it is, if you believe, like, those lives aren't terribly far apart. Like, you go from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4, not 1 to 7 to 18, right?
Yeah.
But there's an order. So, but at the same time, I've got to say that remembering Berenstain, like, it just makes more sense that people's egos get hung up on these little factoids.
David,
you go ahead.
At first blush, I too thought this was confabulation, and that it's really easy to see how whole bunches of people can have the same mismemory of the same event. And most of them I didn't really get. I was never a follower of the Berenstain Bears. I never really noticed whether Fruit Loops was F-R-U-I-T or F-R-O-O-T. However, there were one or two that really grabbed me, and one of them was R2-D2, CP3O's silver leg from the knee down. Everybody remembers his armor or his robotics as being gold. Every bit of it, every piece of it is gold. And now if you just do a Google search for CP3O, everything you see, he's got a silver leg from the knee down on his right leg. You know, on our left as we look at it. And that's so that's an oddball one. No, what, no one ever noticed that before? And they're noticing it now, and they're remembering it differently as being all gold.
All right. Another, well, as you say that, Uncle Lou, as you say that, just to keep it current, I went to C-3PO, and at Wikipedia, I am looking at a picture, and it shows him all gold from both legs down.
On Wikipedia.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you did a Google image search, it's probably different, because I did this last night.
Well, that's okay, because whether it's C-3PO or what was the other one that I did? Well, the one that I remember the best is, like, an example of this is, like, Play It Again, Sam from Casablanca, right?
And he Casablanca never says play it again, Sam.
Right. And I remember being a kid that people were misquoting that, and then other people were pointing out that it was misquoted. And
another one is another one is James Cagney saying, "You dirty rat." And he never said that. That's one of those things he never said, you know.
Well, okay. So here's the one that actually the barista at the coffee shop told me about was that in The Wizard of Oz, she said, "Do you remember the Scarecrow carrying a gun?" And I said, "Oh, absolutely not." And she's like, "Oh, yeah, nowadays, if you look up the Scarecrow, you know, he's carrying a gun." And I'm like, "Oh, my God, if that's true, I know for a fact that this is, like, something's weird, because the Scarecrow certainly never had a gun," which is part of that human mindset, which says, if I remember the experience this way, I remember it correctly and everything else is wrong, which puts you in that double reverse negative thinking where nothing can be trusted as true. But anyhow.
Yeah, and that shouldn't surprise us.
But when you look at the Wizard of Oz and the Scarecrow, Uncle Lou,
I'm looking at it right now. He's got a gun.
Well, but I looked up, and here's what it says. It says that the guy that played the Scarecrow, and I forget his name, that somebody else had played the Scarecrow on Broadway, right, before it was made into a movie, and that there had been a Time Life article on him about an African hunting trip he had gone on. All right, you see it lining up now? And they said that in the original theater production of The Wizard of Oz, the Scarecrow did carry a gun. If you look at the old theater bills and stuff, they clearly show him packing a sidearm. And it makes sense, right? He's a coward. This is the America. Even today, they'd probably have a gun. You know, I mean, they didn't think of it as – it was like a tool by his side. So in the movie, there is one scene where if you look closely, you can see something that looks like a sidearm on the Scarecrow, and they point out that it was just, they had originally put it in, then they took the gun out, and then this one scene was like a mistake. And I was thinking, okay, is this an example of my barista, like, just taking this little thing and turning it into a Mandela effect? I mean,
well, maybe.
Easily.
I mean, I'm looking at the gun. It's silver. It's a six-shooter revolver. But it's clearly a stage prop, because it doesn't have those holes in the cylinder that you would see from the barrel end, you know. Okay. I hadn't heard this when I my research last night, but in addition to the CP3O silver leg thing, there was one other that really really grabbed me, and there was this guy who was a Star Wars fan. And he says, "I've seen the original Star Wars 600 times." Well, I understand that. I have obsessive movies that I've seen 600 times. One is Avatar. One is Casablanca. One is On the Beach. And one is The Last Voice You Hear. And when you see a movie several hundred times. Exactly.
The Big Lebowski,
when you see a movie
I had to throw that out there.
I appreciate it. When you see a movie several hundred times, you have every syllable of dialogue memorized. And this guy swears up and down that Darth Vader says, "Luke, I am your father." And everybody remembers
right.
that. It's an iconic line. But when they replay it today in light of the Mandela effect, the line is, "No, I am your father," instead of "Luke." Small thing, but it's a big thing to Star Wars fans. So it's another one of those. And then they aired an interview with James Earl Jones, taken many years after the movie, and James Earl Jones repeats it, that he says, "Luke, I am your father," but today it says, No, I am your father. Strange. So I guess the point is, if this is a deliberate cabal thing, what is the end game? What is the point in selectively erasing and rewriting parts of our history? Where is it leading? What's it for?
Well, we've got two different thinkings here. I did not think of this, or at least my research hasn't led me to believe of it. It's the first time I've ever said this. I wasn't thinking about an intergalactic cabal on this one. I was thinking about the collective mass consciousness and just the common misremembrance of little factoids that aren't that important in life, right? But
well, that's probably the real answer, David, but it's not a zoomie.
Right. But you and I and people that think outside the box don't we see, it's funny, we say that we think of the collective ability to co-create and change reality as the more sane answer.
I think it's the more powerful answer. Because now you're dealing with millions of people and not the 1%, you know.
Right. And let's just leave that cabal thing aside. We'll come back to it. Because, these are little factoids, little tiny things. Maybe this has always gone on. Maybe this has gone on for hundreds of thousands of years, but maybe where the galactic interference or help is coming from is by pointing out that it's going on to us, right? Like, if this Bernstein Bears thing had happened in 1920s before the Internet, nobody could really talk about it. I mean, maybe somebody would, it wouldn't get any sort of universal, international, or even national conversation going, right? It would never get out of the door of your house, probably. But in this more modern age now, where social media and we can talk with anybody all over the world, maybe it's just the fact somebody's pointing out that this kind of stuff goes on to us, right? I hadn't really thought about that before. And then the other thing is, because they are small little factoids, forgetting that maybe somebody's evil cabal is linking them together for some sort of big evil, maybe that's what they're pointing out is, look, these little factoids happen most often because the bigger an event is, the more concrete the memories are about it, right? But whether Bernstein was spelled E-A-I or A-I-N or whatever when you're a three-year-old kid, you know, that's the kind of memory you can play with. You know what I mean? So maybe there's a message of hope here that just pointing out, look what you guys can do with your memories. But instead, as humans, we're going to fight over what the memories are rather than get the gist of the message.
Well, you know, certainly you've been in courtroom situations where the testimony of a witness and relying upon his or her memory is critical. And so if memory is a fluid thing, and maybe judges understand this and they weigh other factors rather than what they hear, they weigh perceived sincerity or something else, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
Well, it's usually the jury that's considering testimony like that, not the judge. But, you know what's funny? It's funny you should bring this up as evidentiary matter. We learned in law school long, you know, everybody learns in evidence class is that live testimony, eyewitness accounts of what happened are two things. They are the least credible. I mean, they're the least accurate and the most credible. Like, people will give them the most amount of credibility. Oh, you're an eyewitness? You saw what happens, and they just take every word as true, when in fact, written testimony doesn't change, video testimony doesn't change, documents don't change, hard evidence never changes, but man, eyewitness accounts, they can change minute to minute or day to day, you know? They're influenced by so many factors, not the least of which is other people's accounts of what happened, you know what I mean? The first person to tell the story, if the other people hear it, you know, is going to affect the final story more than the last person.
You know, this is interesting. I have been in family reunion situations, and I consider that I have an excellent, absolutely excellent, near verbatim memory. I've been in family reunion situations where a family member will recount a memory, a common shared family memory. And I'm listening to this account of something that I think I remember very clearly, and it's different. It's just different,
yep.
You know?
Yeah, I think we all come into that experience. And I mean, it sticks out for me at my 30th high school reunion of the, maybe not even experiences, just of me, like what I was like in high school. And, you know, you think, I know what I'm like. No, who else could know what I'm like in high school? And then you think back on high school, and at the time I was in high school, I didn't know what I was like. You know, I was still trying to figure that out. But when people talk about it 30 years later, they seem to have a better hold. Maybe it's not the memory, maybe it's just the accuracy, but they seem to remember me in high school better than I remember me in high school. You know what I mean? Does that make any sense?
Well, you made a big impression on people because you're Dr.
Well, this
Dave.
Is true of everybody, though, not just me. This is like just I'm the way it would be true of anybody, the way they remember the situation. They're not clouded by our own biases and prejudices of how we view ourselves, right? They're a little more objective. So when they and it could be something with their 30 years experience since high school that it happened. Like in high school, they didn't have any better idea of who I was than I do. But when I look back on that experience of high school, I'm thinking back. I can think back to my memory of how I was in high school, of how I thought while I was in high school, and confuse myself into thinking, wow, I really didn't have, I don't have a clear picture of who I was. Whereas when somebody else looks on me 30 years, they have all that experience and none of the bias or the personal experience of when it happened, and they are able to construct a more objective picture of what happened 30 years ago about me because they weren't me, if that makes any sense.
What do you make of the Kennedy assassination connection here?
Oh, I can make a hat or a brooch or a pterodactyl. Who knows that?
Did you see that in your research?
Yeah, but you have to name that movie line for me. Uncle Lou, I could make a hat or a brooch or a pterodactyl.
Oh, okay. Let's say the Big Lebowski.
Oh, that's a good guess
knowing
me. But Airplane, remember the effeminate steward on the airplane? And he one of the jokes was, I can't remember what the item was. It was a napkin. A napkin with writing on it. What do you make of this? And he grabs it. He goes, I could make a hat or a brooch or a pterodactyl.
Okay. Sorry I missed that one.
All right. JFK,
you know, I've never been a fan of comedies. Let me say that. I've never been a big fan of comedies. Go ahead.
Yeah. I say JFK was assassinated by a... the mafia. Well, I mean, that's the
No. You're way off base here, David. The Mandela effect has to do with memories of whether there were four people in the limo or six. Was it a four-seater or a six-seater? That's what's disputed here in the Mandela effect.
Oh,
it's got nothing
to
do with who pulled the trigger. Well,
I was born in 66, so I don't have a lot of memories of that experience.
Well, again, here's a guy who had studied the Zagruder tapes. I'm saying it wrong. You know, several thousand times, and he knew every frame of them. And he's saying the limousine has changed. Now, here's what I remember. And again, this has confused me to the point where I'm not trusting my own memories. I remember Jackie and Jack in the back seat, Governor Conley and Mrs. Conley in the middle seat, and then a driver, at least one driver, maybe two. One was could have been a Secret Service guy. So that puts six people. If you don't have the six people, then it means Conley and his wife was driving the limo. That doesn't make any sense. The dispute is, is this a four-seater car, Lincoln Town car, or is it a six-seater limo? You know, three bench seats, you know? So that's the dispute. And I just wondered if you had any thoughts on that.
I don't have any memories. I just pulled it up now to look at it. I mean, here's the honest to God truth. In one of those cars, no matter what size it was, you could probably fit about 12 people across one of those benches in the day.
Yeah, but they didn't have 12
people. There's a third row of people. Well,
right.
I definitely, you know what? I definitely remember it being two rows of people.
So Connolly was in the driver's, up with the driver.
I just, you know what, I mean, like I said, I don't have a lot of memories of it, but I definitely, like, when I pictured it in my mind, I pictured two benches.
See, Connolly,
two rows
Connolly took a bullet. Connolly took, Governor Connolly took a bullet in the shoulder. You know, and because it wasn't fatal, people don't even remember that Connolly took a bullet in his shoulder, you know?
Right. Yeah. Do you remember two rows or three rows? I'm still not getting
it. I remember a big limo with three bench seats. Part of this Mandela effect thing is they claim you can now see Jackie Kennedy, shooting Jack in the head in the back seat. So this is really getting into the ridiculous, you see.
Okay, well, hold on. Ridiculous is why we're here. We're not here to prejudice this thought, because that gave me a little shiver right there when you said that.
Right.
I've never heard
it had
that.
To do with, see, back in the days when there were three bench seats or two bench seats, they claim that the Secret Service guy driving it. Now, just listen to this a minute. They claim the Secret Service guy driving it turned around with a pistol and shot Jack Kennedy in the head. But now that there are three rows of seats, he could not have done that without shooting right through Mrs. Connolly. So Jackie now has the gun, and she shot Jack in the head. This is just came up in my research last night. I'm not saying I'm buying into it. I'm just throwing it out as part of our discussions today.
Right. Well, assuming that the Mandela effect is true, here we go. By putting stuff out there like that, like Jackie shot him in the head, what they're doing is trying to create that reality for the future of how we remember the past. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I refer to it often. I better define it again. The double reverse thinking. That's what we used to call a double reverse, is when you say, you know, You're it. I mean, it's just that kind of thinking that you can't trust anything, because either that's a conspiracy theory, or there's a bigger conspiracy theory making it not true, and all of a sudden you can't trust anybody, you can't trust anything, right? Because it's a reverse. No, it's a double reverse. No, it's a triple reverse, right? It's the secret agent that is that's the where it came from. The secret agent. It's all of a sudden he's a double agent.
Oh, yeah, he's a mole, yeah, he's working both sides.
And then he's a triple agent, right? And then he's a quadruple
agent,
and it's just, it begets the whole thing of not being able to trust anything. So, but here's what I'm trying to get at, Uncle Lou, because this was what not clear for our listeners is, so is the remembrance of JFK's limo today, after the Mandela effect, two rows or three rows?
It's three today. Which is why the driver couldn't shoot Jack, as they say he did in the first movie. And this is why Jackie is doing it, because Mrs. Connolly would have been in the way. But I have to say, I'm pretty sure I remember this as not a regular off-the-yard Lincoln Town Car, but a stretch limo, a presidential limo, you know, which means it would have had three rows of seating. You know, otherwise John Connolly is alone in the front seat with a driver. I just don't think they would have treated the governor.
No, okay, so here's the thing. Is what I remember is six people in the limo in two rows. I guess I should have said that.
Well,
right.
we clearly know Jack and Jackie were two people in one row. You know, there wasn't a third guy with them. There wasn't a third person with Jack and Jackie in the back seat. But you said something.
That's
I'm going to go back
remember
to something.
It.
You
I
said,
mean, you,
yeah.
When
yeah,
you
this,
get
this
Mandela effect, Uncle Lou, you better be careful what you're saying is true, I guess.
Well, I'm not sure I'm saying anything is true.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on here.
You said something that I want to pick up on about how future generations will remember it. And I think that's a poignant comment, and I'll tell you why. Because it occurred to me that so much of the stuff I was hearing belong to, like, my generation, okay, of 50s born baby boomers, and that soon we're all going to be gone, and the live memory people will be removed from the planet, and therefore the revisionists can just have their way, have their day, they can do whatever they want. So that occurred
well,
to me,
not,
too.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
He who controls the present controls the past. He who controls the past controls the future.
Right. That's what I saw at the very beginning of the first thing I watched on it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's how it came up.
Yeah. But you know what's funny? We're dealing with some stuff we've never, ever dealt with before, though.
That's why this was so fascinating to me.
And you know what? It is fascinating to me, too. The idea of memories is so difficult because we just don't understand. I mean, when they're memories, it's the old story of the guy that wakes up in a bed. It's a Twilight Zone episode, right? That wakes up and he's got a different wife and different kids. He's got a whole different life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what, Uncle Lou?
Mm.
I hope this show is still going on. That's all I can say. Oh, yeah, it is. Okay.
You got 23 minutes to go.
I was afraid that I had somehow turned us off. So, fascinating stuff, memories. And once it happens, is there a set reality or is it pliable? I mean, wow. Wow. So I'm still not clear on this JFK thing. I got to go back. You say that as you remember it, it was three rows with two people in each row. That's how you remember it?
No. Not people aside, because there could have been just one driver in the front seat. I remember three bench seats, three rows of seating. Numbers of people aside. I know there was Governor Connally and his wife. I know there was Jackie, and there was, you know, at least one driver and maybe a Secret Service guy next to that one driver. It's the front seat I'm not clear on. But I do remember with more than two bench seats, yeah.
So you remember it as it is, as it is today. You remember, your memories are in line with the way it's presented today.
Right, and that's how it was when I went through this whole thing. Half of them I had different memories, half of them I had the same memories. That's how it was for me.
We could probably, I mean, isn't the point of this confabulation that you could pick any little fact out of the past that isn't that relevant so people don't remember it that well and play with it? I mean, and then the fact that people could do that to, here's the double reverse side, that people could do it to make us not understand that we actually do it, you know, putting in fake ones to mess us up for the actual ones, like half of them are real, half of them aren't. But what, I don't know, you've kind of changed my thinking on this a little bit, Uncle Lou. It seems like that all these little facts, there's one for everybody, or there's a couple for everybody. Out of the 12, like any one person might just remember one or two for, you know, certain. What do you think?
Yeah.
Does that seem to be the case?
Yeah, Luke, I am your father. That's very clear in my mind that he says Luke. That has been changed to no, I am your father. That's a real clear one for me.
Okay, well, how about I'm coming up with my own new theories now, Uncle Lou, as I like to do. Because I hit on something there, which is in the history of mankind on this planet, as far as we know. We are dealing with this problem for the first time ever. We're confronted with this, and it's because of electricity, and it's because of technology that has never existed before. We're going with the more plain version of history. That there's not, you know, times in the past when we were more progressed than we are now. We're going to assume that we are the most progressed we've ever been at the current time. And then,
I like that premise.
Yeah, and that this is coming up because all of a sudden everything's recorded. Every little fact is recorded. I mean, you know, 1,000 years ago, if you thought James had been spelled with a Z at the end or an S at the end, that's a ridiculous one, I know, but you wouldn't be able to talk about it. You know what I mean? You wouldn't, again, it's just the technology wasn't there, and then the technology wouldn't be there to confirm it, right? So
yeah.
Well,
you know, that was another thing. There seemed to be a great preponderance of these events that they were using as examples that had to do with how products in particular had changed their spellings. And one guy, one Bible scholar, got up and pulled out his Bible and he said, all these verses are wrong. I remember it like this. I remember it like this. I remember it very clearly. I've been studying this all my life. So it's not just play it against them, you know. there was a lot of stuff like spellings and of products,
right.
You know.
Oh, well,
also,
so far,
get this. How do you remember the – here's one that resonated with me. The Coca-Cola logo.
Yeah.
How do you remember that? I remember it the way the guy presented it last night on YouTube, that there's this Coca, and then there's this squirrely, Tilden-like, italicized hyphen, and then it says Cola.
Yeah.
Now, you do a Google image search right now and see what you get.
All right, Coca-Cola.
Yeah, then you can put a Coca-Cola logo, Coca-Cola vintage logo, Coca-Cola original logo. They've all been changed. They've all been changed. So this is one that grabbed me. Because I thought, I think, here's my mind, and it could be playing tricks on me, I think I have a very clear memory of this very prevalent Americana logo with the little squiggly.
When I pull it up, some of them have a hyphen and some of them don't.
No, it's not a hyphen. It's a little square above the tail on the I, on the A.
You mean the A? Yeah, that's what I'm saying. When I do a logo search and I hit images on, Yahoo.
I don't get any. I've got thousands of these images to look at. I'm looking at them right now. And none of them have the squiggly hyphen. They've all got the square.
Oh, I see what you're saying. It's not whether it's there or not. It's the square versus the hyphen. Okay.
Right, the squiggly italicized type hyphen. Now, I'm looking at this very closely, and I'm seeing, you know, this square looks like it's dotting an I coming off the tail of the A, which would make C-O-C-A-I well on its way to spelling out cocaine.
I was thinking it looked Arabic. Makes it look Arabic.
Now, also, this harpoony Maori-style tattoo tail on the first C, I don't remember that. You see that stylized harpoony tail on the C of the first C? I don't remember that shape. I don't remember that shape.
Well, I've seen lots of shirts of Grateful Dead shows that say cocaine. Like the way you're saying this is on its way to cocaine, I've seen that T-shirt 25 years ago. So
type in Ford logo. Just type in Ford logo.
Ford logo.
Ford, F-O-R-D.
Okay.
And click on images.
There's a little curlicue at the F that I don't.
That's what's different. It was never there before. That little curlicue weird-ass thing on the cross on the F was not there. You picked it up right away, and so did I, because I don't remember that.
Honestly, I don't remember that.
Well, that's an honest answer, you know. But I have an eye for graphics.
I think I should have remembered it. I've looked at that Ford logo. I used to be in the cars when I was in, eighth grade. I mean, the thing is, I think I would have said, hey, what's that? I mean, it's the first thing that pops up. What's that little curly Q?
That was the very first thing you said, as if it shouldn't be there.
It
That's the very first thing
Arabic.
You said, David.
Maybe this is a war between maybe it is cabal stuff with technologies we're thousands of years advanced from other planets. And this is a war of, it's the eternal war of Christianity versus Islam. No,
well, see, now we're off in the deep end of where we usually are, but this has been, I think this has been one of the best subject matters we've ever tackled, you know.
Wow.
Just, it's so new and different to me, and I have thoughts and memories on both sides of the arguments here, you know.
On both sides. Memories,
well, there's probably more
experience.
Than two. There's probably
well, no,
more
I'm
than
with
two.
You. It's true, and, Wow. Well, Uncle Lou, it's true. no matter what time you're alive in this world, it is an amazing time to be alive when there are stupendous things that you could call miracles going on in endless concession all around you. What is it, that song, 100 million miracles happening every day? And but sometimes some people are alive at a time when special events happen, things that in history are just bigger events, and it just makes sense that those times there are some people that happen to be alive, and maybe we're alive at that special time.
Okay, here's another big one. Here's another big event in history with a lot of imagery that that's burned into people's heads. The guy, the tank man, the so-called tank man at Tiananmen Square, did he get run over by a tank on film? A horrible, graphic, bloody mess?
Tiananmen Square, the tank man, there was a picture of him standing in front of the tank.
Right.
I remember, I'm not even looking at the picture, right? But I remember that those tanks ran over a lot of people. Like, I remember it, that they were mowing down people every day, protesters every day. But whether that specific guy in that picture, whether that was a picture of pre getting run over or standing up to a tank that never ran over him, I just don't remember.
Okay, because this is such a powerful image, there are people like the guy who saw Star Wars 600 times. There are people who absolutely swear to God that they remember a horrific image of this guy getting squished by a tank, tread and blood on the pavement and everything else. And yet there are, if you look at the film clip, the guy, you know, the guy walks away from it. Or they interview him later on you know, the guy's still alive. So that's one of those where, did he die? Did he not die? What's your recollection of Nelson Mandela, by the way? Because I couldn't remember accurately my own. I couldn't remember my own historical facts.
I don't ever remember him dying in prison. I mean, that was the whole thing. Everyone wanted him freed. That's why I was trying so hard to get the song Freeing Nelson Mandela, which I did buy on iTunes and managed to download, but couldn't get on the show. And that song was made by the Specials. Well, when they were the Special AKA in like the late 80s or mid 80s, you know?
I think
then,
there's something we haven't said here. And I think it's,
wait, do you remember him dying? Before we move on, do you remember Mandela dying?
No, I'm not sure. I remember him getting out of prison. I remember him becoming the president of his nation. I remember his audience with the Pope and Desmond Tutu and everything. That's what I remember.
Yeah, of course.
And yet this phenomenon is named after him. There's something else we haven't been saying, and it's related to another possible explanation for this, and whether it's CERN induced or not, that what's conjectured is that we are tapping into not only a parallel world or a parallel universe, but we are intermixing timelines, alternate timelines from that other world, and they're getting somehow blended in with ours, changing certain things from the past. I don't know if your research led
to
any of that.
I remember, I don't know where I got this. There's no way I could remember. But I remember, maybe it was in the book Time Quake. It was one of the big authors. Was it Kurt Vonnegut that wrote Time Quake? It was an author who'd had a lot of years off, a decades off, and so then wrote a book called Time Quake and then died. And he talked about the Time Quake as like an earthquake. Kurt Vonnegut, published in 97. And I think it was in that book. He said that when the time quake happens and messes up the timeline, the first thing that people will notice, like the first strangeness that people will notice, is that people that they thought were married to each other and their friends and stuff are all, like some of them are married to different people. Like you might remember with your whole brain and experience that Tammy's married to Bob, but then then all of a sudden you see him and Tammy's married to Paul. You're like, wait, and they've got kids and they've been married for 25 years.
Yeah,
anyhow,
wow.
I think that's from the book Time Quake. But, this whole, so really, even though we've only got 10 minutes left, and we'll touch on it here. Another explanation, another place to take this is, or at least it is the Mayans, you know? The Mayans told us something was happening back out in 2012, right? The date certain they gave us that wasn't the end of the world, clearly, and they never claimed that it would be the end of the world, right? On their calendar, which continued the next day after 2012, you know, it just kept going. Their calendar simply said that that was the end of a Bachtun. And a Bachtun is a period of 5,600. Oh, it's been a while. My Mayan studies aren't 5,650 years or something is a Bachtun. I can look it up. But that 2012 was special because if you think of the Bachtun as like this 5,600-year period, and then you think of, I don't remember the term, as the bigger 100,000-year cycle, and you think of the bigger cycle of a million years, right, that the Mayans all categorized in this long count, which we call a calendar, that what made 2012 special was that it was the end of the Bachtun, the 5,600-year period. But that Bachtun also happened to be the end of the larger 120,000-year cycle. It was the last Bachtun of that cycle, so it was also the end of the 120,000-year cycle. That cycle also happened to be the last cycle of the bigger million-year cycle, and so on and so on. What made 2012 special was it was the end of all of these counts that made it, you know. And then we start a new one, you know. So since 2012 have things been happening to, you know, and all of this is related to time, of course. The Mayans were, you know, this is all a way of keeping time. And so they told us that after 2012, the timekeeping wouldn't be 100%, it's not gone and something new replaced it, but that somehow some progression or change has been made in time since 2012. And, you know, that could have something to do with it. This is the Mandela effect could be one of the repercussions or outcomes of, you know, this. And I'd have to say they're minor ones, right? But now let's go to that place you took us and I took us out of, the intergalactic cabal, the Corey Good world and David Wilcock world. What if this is some sort of plan to change little factoids here and there for some bigger plan that we cannot recognize and couldn't possibly see? What do you think, Uncle Lou?
Well, I think if they're diddling around with the names of candy bars and Captain Crunch cereals, this may be the beginning experimental phases of it. But if this technique, and I think it is potentially a powerful technique, by altering the past, you alter a perception of our future. I think I think there's some potential there, but I don't think they're going to do it with Captain Crunch or Kit Kat candy bars or Miracle Whip without the H or Mirror Mirror on the Wall versus Magic Mirror on the Wall. Or all the other things that are
Miracle Whip without the H.
It's Miracle WIP now.
WIP.
They went through a million products whose logos had changed. At least the stuff I was watching.
Uh-huh.
And so Miracle Whip without the H is one of them.
Is that how it is today?
Yes, Kit Kat candy bars used to have a hyphen between the Kit and the Cat. They don't anymore. Ford now has this fruity little squirrely tildy thing at the end of it. That's really weird. The Ford thing is really weird. You know?
Yeah.
Coca-Cola lost its squiggle.
Wow. This show today has left me confused, Uncle Lou.
That's good. That's really good. You know?
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing, and I really liked your written blurb about the confabulation. I thought it was, you know, nicely presented, and it was starting to pull me in that direction, but then I remembered my own experiences. See, half of this I can totally disagree with in terms of my memories don't agree with the Mandela effect, and then half of them my memories do agree with the Mandela effect. So it's kind of bizarre for me, too. It's bizarre for me as well.
It's bizarre. That's all we can say. It could be somebody just playing with memories, too. I mean, you know, if you take anything, If I were to go back and look at 1,000 different products from the 70s, I could pick one out and say, oh, you know, change it this way, or don't you remember it that way? And you go, oh, yeah, I kind of remember. I mean, the power of suggestion is great. We know that to be true, too, right? So somebody takes the Kit Kat logo and says, oh, don't you remember this used to have a hyphen? And it's like, oh, yeah, that did have a hyphen. Where's the hyphen gone? When, in fact, it's just somebody toying around with you. It doesn't have to be an intergalactic cabal at that level messing with timelines. That could just be someone with basic psychology knowledge, you know?
Here's a real big one.
Let me
just stick this one in. Old maps and globes clearly show a large land mass to the west of Australia, sort of on the southern end of Australia. It's totally gone now. It's totally gone. I mean bigger than the 60 Solomon Islands that have disappeared because of sea level rise. This was quite substantial.
Well, do you remember a landmass down there?
I don't. I'm saying I really don't. Okay, and I have to admit that. But this came up in my research, and they showed they couldn't find it on any maps either. But they dug up an old, like 60s era serial TV thing where a student and a child are spinning a globe, and they stop the spinning in front of Australia, and sure enough, it's there. It's there, but it's not there today.
Well, I don't remember any landmass by Australia.
I don't either, to be honest. But nonetheless, it was one of those things that came up last night.
Right, somebody else does, huh? Well, let's go down the list. I mean, do you have some sort of list there? We've got less than 3 minutes left. Maybe we could just name off a few other ones just for our listeners to just give thought to.
They've changed the spelling of Gandhi.
From what to what? No H?
G-A-N-D-H-I. Now it's G-H-A-N-D-I. They shifted the position of the H. Sex in the City is now Sex and the City. Anne Rice's book and movie called Interview with the Vampire is now Interview with a Vampire. Daylight Savings Time is now Daylight Saving Time. The chimpanzee Curious George no longer has a tail.
All right, wait a second. This one got me. Sex and the City
is now.
No, it's Sex and the City.
That's what it is now. It used to be. Well, it was either Sex and the City, and it's now Sex in the City.
It was Sex in the City, and it is now, after the Mandela effect, Sex and the City. And I
there
can say, Baloo, of all the ones, even more than the Ford logo. And mind you, I've only watched a couple of these episodes. I don't watch TV. But in my mind, I would fight to the death over the fact the show is called Sex in the City.
Yeah.
And I'm looking here, and it says Sex and the City. And that's wrong. I mean, of all of these that we've mentioned today, I have to say that Sex in the City is the one that I personally feel the strongest about. But, Uncle Lou, on that note of mystery, I hear the music.
We're almost out of time.
Do you hear it? Oh, it's far later than that. We are
this
under the
morning
one
is differed
mark.
By the writing of words, the translation of
books,
the ciphers.
Well, I think you and I can still talk to music.
We have our extra 15 minutes after the show ends, but
dwell and shine, rave,
I'm
long,
Dr.
They
Dave.
Try them, covering and hovering over.
And he's Uncle Lou. Right on
and
the
Uncle
Lou.
Lou.
Somehow then
yeah, we're
now.
Saying goodbye.
Wow,
thanks for joining us on what I feel was possibly our best episode to date of spiritual proof and point to Mandela. I was actually expecting to railroad this one to say it's all a bunch of BS, but man, it didn't happen that way. So thanks for coming, and we will see you next time on
The Free Flower Flows Within, growing, while the one holding is unknowing, grooming, silent soul, playing the violent
spiritual
ignorantly improvise in between days, not knowing the keen way. I mean, hey, what's your favorite color scheme? My brother dreams to come clean. Don't sway all the way, yo, till the halo glows like a rainbow. In a light, transparent like a phantom lantern of answers. And question dancers, they dance on insecurity, scared to shit. shout. Little faith and hate without a doubt. They have double clout, but I have a triple mouth. With intensive perception out and about. To come in from the rain, watch out.
All right,
Uncle Lou. This is the first time I think I've ever thought that we really needed the extra 15 minutes. Can I tell you something that I just figured out about 5 minutes ago?
Yeah,
that
go
I
ahead.
I never entered the chat room. This Blog Talk Radio, I completely forgot the blog part. I was so into what we were saying. I don't know that anybody had joined us during this. In fact, I know for a fact nobody joined us live during the show, but nevertheless, the chat board is now open. If anybody would like to chat away.
Oh, no wonder I couldn't get on the chat board. You have to open it?
Oh, yeah. Oh,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, because I tried to get on it.
Yeah, so anyhow. All right, Uncle Lou. Sex in the City.
Let me finish my list.
That show was called Sex in the City.
Yeah,
you know,
and now it's
do,
Sex
Uncle
and
Lou?
The City? Yeah.
You know what I'm going to do?
Because
what? My unnamed wife, is really into that show. Even though we don't have TV, she's watched several episodes on video. I'm going to just text her, Sex in the City or Sex and the City.
Oh, she might think you're inviting her for some extracurricular activities.
Ha, ha, ha. No, she'll know what I'm talking about. Oh, I'll put it in parentheses just in case she thinks it is a sexual offer. If she says yes, I'm gone, though. I'm telling you, this 15 minutes is over, and I'm headed to the city.
I don't blame you. Listen, can I finish my list here?
Oh, yeah, please.
Okay. Remember the Bible verse, and the lion will lay down with the lamb?
Yeah.
It's been changed to a wolf, not a lamb.
What?
The lion will live with the wolf. I mean, the wolf will live with the lamb. It's not even lie down with. It will live with the lamb.
Oh, it replaces the lion. I thought the lion and the wolf line together. That's pretty strange.
No. The wolf replaces the lion. Now,
so
we talked about
the lamb. The wolf will lay down with the lamb.
Yeah. Now, there are some
that's
who
different.
Remember. I just want to get through this list quickly. There are some who think Mongolia was much larger once than it's shown on today's maps. I don't know about that. The Chick-fil-A logo has changed from C-H-I-C-K to C-H-I-C as in chic filet. And then they talk about human consciousness being what's responsible for changing these things. Tostinos, remember Tostinos? Little pizza roll things, they're now Totinos. There's no S anymore, original S. Remember Depends, adult diapers, Depends?
Yeah, Depends, sure.
Depends is now Depend. Cure-Aid bandages, which were C-U-R-A-I-D, Cure-Aid, is now Cure-Aid, C-U-R-A-D, Cure-Aid.
That's wrong.
OxyClean, which relies on oxygen. And oxygen is spelled O-X-Y-G-E-N, so it was always Oxy, O-X-Y, clean, OxyClean. That's now Oxy with an I, O-X-I-Clean. There's something about Skechers.
Mary?
Skechers.
With a Z at the end? Hello? Uncle Lou? Well, we seem to have lost Uncle Lou somewhere. Let's see if what it would look like on the board. Well, he was going through the list, and I've got to say that this Mandela effect, man, it has me with the little heebie-jeebies that are creepy, because as you just read down the list of all these things, I mean, definitely some of those I distinctly remember a different way. So what does this mean for spirituality? Well, what it means is, if it's true, let's just say the whole world's pliable and we can do whatever we want. It means that when we get down on ourselves and we think things are so horrible and we think, you know, the world's against us and all those thoughts that lead people to depression and even suicide, that none of those are true. That those are all created by you in your head, and you have the ability to change the reality around you to be anything you want it to be. a lot of times people think, well, you say that, but it's hard and it's impossible and things are as they are. And the truth of the matter is, it's a lot easier than we think. Just got to make the action. You got to make it, like, for instance, if you want violence out of your life, then just remove it. Just take it out. Just take out thoughts of violence, take out acts of violence. Because when you start doing that, then all of a sudden you realize where the violence comes from, that it's built into the language, right? That it's built into the thinking process, and that has to be removed. And then when you remove that, all of a sudden, it's just, in reality, it's just a way of changing the way you talk. But what happens is it changes the world around you. And people that don't understand that will claim up and down that you're crazy, that it's not true. They'll use science, they'll use religion, they'll use whatever they got, they'll use guns to prove to you that the world is violent. But it's as simple as not accepting that as reality. And that's how we enter a world of peace, because it is in peace that we come, and it is in peace that we live, and it is in peace that we continue. I lost Uncle Lou. I hope it's not me that's lost, but for Uncle Lou and Dr. Dave, I'm going to say thanks for joining us here on Spiritual Boot Camp, and we'll be coming back to you next week with a new topic of equal paranormal activity and good times. There it is, house music, Rios House Music, featuring Johnny Banner. I'm going to leave you with that. Thanks for joining us here on Spiritual Boot Camp.